there was a rush to get these large banks into TARP, and there was certainly a rush to get the large banks out of TARP. And when we talk about it being a rush, you ask, why is there such a rush? And the big banks were complaining a lot about executive compensation restrictions and also about a stigma that related to them being in TARP. And what we found were that the federal banking regulators really did bow to that pressure, as well as a pressure to ramp back the government's ownership in these financial institutions.
So it sounds like they were trying to serve two masters. One was getting the money out quickly to the people, the institutions that needed it, and getting it back quickly so the government could withdraw. That's kind of one mission. But the other mission was to make sure that the banking system was sound. So it sounds like they sort of pulled the crutch away from someone whose leg they weren't sure was healed yet.
Well, I would say that there was arguably a missed opportunity to strengthen the quality of these institutions' capital base before they exited TARP. I mean, if you recall, when Treasury and the federal banking regulators went through the trouble of conducting the stress tests, which determined what these banks needed in order to be strong enough to absorb their own losses in an adverse market condition so that they wouldn't pull down the entire financial system. So then they used the results of those stress tests to set the criteria for banks to exit TARP. And they determined once you pull out the TARP capital, how much does each bank need to have to reach the capital level that it needed under the stress test. And so they set this criteria that in order for these largest banks to exit TARP, they needed to raise in common stock issuance roughly 50% of the TARP dollars they'd be paying back. They called that the one for two. But then weeks later, the federal banking regulators essentially threw out that criteria. And the only regulator who was really championing that banks should not exit TARP until they could meet that standard was the FDIC. So it really does raise the question of why they went through all the trouble of conducting the stress test and setting the TARP criteria to exit off of those tests if in the end they were not going to hold banks to it.
Well, that seems to be evidence from a process standpoint that maybe within Treasury there was no one light in charge of the whole thing.
Well, this is an interesting process because it's the federal banking regulators who make the determinations. This would be the Federal Reserve Board and the FDIC and the OCC, and they would debate amongst each other when a bank would give a proposal as to whether it was going to be strong enough, and then they would give those proposals to Treasury, and Treasury would comment as well. And what we found were that the Federal Reserve Board and the OCC and Treasury were willing to take proposals that were a lot less than the criteria they had just set off the stress test, and the FDIC really pushed those other regulators to keep rejecting the proposals and rejecting their proposals, and eventually each of these banks were this is Bank of America, Citigroup, Wells Fargo, and PNC, they were allowed to exit on less than what was determined to be needed for them under the stress test in order for them to have enough capital to absorb their losses. It really does raise a question of how strong these banks should have been when they exited TARP.
And do we have any evidence that they left in a weakened state and therefore they're still in trouble?
Well, I mean, I think you can look at these companies now and see where they're at with their capital. If they had stuck to the criteria, if the federal banking regulators had stuck to the criteria that they had issued based off the stress test, these institutions would have certainly exited TARP in a much stronger capital position and a much higher quality capital position. And now you see some of these companies selling off assets and doing other things to try to raise capital.
We're speaking with Christy Romero, Acting Special Inspector General for the Troubled Asset Relief Program. So if you add this all up, banks exiting too early without the capital base that they needed, a seeming willingness to rush on the part of regulators and the Treasury Department, what does it all add up to? What's the lesson learned here, and what does it say about the whole TARP program?
Well, I think the lesson learned is that federal banking regulators, along with Treasury, really bear responsibility for ensuring that the nation's largest and systemically important financial institutions hold enough high-quality capital so that they can absorb their future losses in the event of a possible future severe shock to the financial system. And the regulators really have to remain vigilant against all these banks' demands to relax the capital requirements, while at the same time the banks are taking on even more risk. And I think the other thing to think about is there's this big rush to get these big banks out, but we've got a lot of smaller community banks, more than 400, still left in TARP. And what is the clear exit path for those banks?
And for these regulators, I mean, who should be overseeing them? Who should be cracking the whip? A lot of them are, you know, independent agencies.
Right. I mean, I think you've got each of them has a responsibility, and, you know, each of them has a different policy. The FDIC will certainly want to protect their fund as well as their lending sources. The Federal Reserve Board obviously is looking at the safety and soundness of the financial system. So I think for each of these, they all have to work together. And that was one of the good things that we found, was that there was the working together, the checks and balances that happened from that clearly resulted in a much stronger exit for these banks than would have been the case. And so that needs to continue to happen.
And let's get over to the idea of the legal fees. What's the problem there? Sounds like they were overpaid and nobody was watching the legal bill details.
Well, Treasury paid millions of dollars in fees to law firms related to TARP. And so what we did was we focused on five firms that Treasury had paid $27 million to. And we took a sample of $9.1 million of those in those bills, and we tested them against the best practices that are used by other government entities. And we found significant weaknesses in Treasury's contract with the firms, in Treasury's procedures for the bills, and we found a lot of problems with the bills. Block billing, inadequate and vague descriptions. The most striking example of this came from one firm, Simpson Thatcher, which provided no detail of work performed whatsoever. And in fact, in one day, two bills came. One was for a flat $200,000. One was for $300,000. No description of the amount, the work that was done, the amount of hours that was done, the date range for this. I mean, there was really no way of knowing if these fees were reasonable. These were not flat rate contracts. It's also striking that it's just $200,000 or $300,000 when these are supposed to be hourly contracts. And in order to be paid, under the federal regulations require that these fees be reasonable. We're not saying that all the fees are unreasonable, but we're saying that Treasury really needed to question them and get more detail on them to make that determination, because without that detail, what we found is that there was an unacceptable risk that taxpayer is overpaying for legal services related to TARP.
So it sounds like when you add all this up together, the Inspector General's Office for TARP still has a ways to go. And in fact, we're not really fully extricated from TARP at all.
Oh, absolutely. There's still $122 billion outstanding. That figure is larger than most government programs. And SIGTARP, our responsibility is to protect the taxpayer dollars. That's a responsibility we take very seriously. And here at SIGTARP, you've got more than 150 public servants who are out there protecting the taxpayers' interests.